Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. We are broadcasting from around the world today. Of course, Danielle is in Zurich, always. But I'm in Indian Wells, which is near Palm Springs.
Oh, pretty, I didn't know you were right in Indian Wells.
Yeah, I'm at the La Quinta Resort, which was built in 1926.
You're at the La Quinta, Dad? You didn't tell me that.
See, look at this room. You got my fireplace right here.
Well, clearly you didn't remember. That's where Nuno and I went for our honeymoon.
Oh my gosh, I did not remember that. Oh, well, dang. I
it's
don't understand
very
why. It's fabulous.
Lovely place. Lovely, really lovely, lovely.
Really beautiful. I'm out here without Melissa. I'm hanging up with my brother. Hanging with my brother.
That's so great.
We've been out racing cars and it's been great.
That's so awesome. I'm so glad you can do it. You've been going through it, and it's really good to feel like you can get back to the things that you really enjoy.
You know, when I was a river guide before you were born and I was making $4,000 a year, I never felt super pinched for money, mm-hmm. but I had a lifestyle that was very, very inexpensive, mm-hmm. right? So I lived on the floor of the Transcendental Meditation Center in a sleeping bag. Everything I owned fit into a small waterproof bag. Excuse me. I drove a really beat up Volkswagen that I bought for a few hundred dollars and had to rebuild the engine. And
Did you actually do that? You actually rebuilt the engine?
Twice.
Because I remember when I was 14 and I got my learner's permit, you came home with this book that was about how you rebuild a VW engine.
Yes, that's the
remember
book.
Remember that? And you were like, we're going to do this, and then that's going to be your car. And then we both read the book, and then I think you were like, actually, we're not going to do this.
We're not going to do this. I thought it was because
like you didn't quite believe that you'd be able to do it out of a book. So I didn't know that you had actually ever done it.
Yes.
I'm sure you told me, but I didn't like process that.
The first time I did it in a barn in Flagstaff. I was living in my Volkswagen bus and we had a barn for the river gear. And I pulled the Volkswagen into that. And really, Flagstaff, Arizona is up high altitude, snow all over the ground, very cold. Mm-hmm. There was a potbelly stove there. I'd load it with firewood. And so my backside was warm, my front side freezing sort of thing. And I pulled the engine out of this Volkswagen, put it up on a bench and proceeded to follow this book to take it all apart. And then following the book, I took the fly rods, whatever those rods are that are bolted to the crankshaft and run the piston up and down, took those down to a machine shop and had the bearings fixed, redone.
Okay.
And the machine shop bent one of the fly rods.
Okay.
And I didn't know that.
That sounds bad.
It sounds terrible. So I came back, put the whole engine together, started up, and it was just like this whole thing trying to tear itself apart. And I'm like, every time I try to do something mechanical, this is what happens. It's just like the karma of it. I didn't even do anything wrong, but God is telling me don't fix things. Somebody bent a fly rod.
How did you drive the car? Wait, I'm confused.
Couldn't drive the car.
Right.
So I had to take the engine back out. And I called a friend of mine and said, this is what it sounds like. I actually had the engine in and I had him listen to it. He says, you got a bent fly rod.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Pulled it apart, took the fly rods down. They straightened them out, apologized profusely. and I put it back together again. This was a 6 month project.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And it made me swear off mechanical stuff.
I mean, that makes more sense to me now why you were sort of excited to do it again, but then also not exactly confidently thrilled.
You would have had to been very enthusiastic, I think, at that point. You would have been, yes, Dad, let's do it. And I'm probably, you were like,
I was like, one, I don't want a really old VW Bug.
I don't want an old Volkswagen.
And two, this makes no sense to me.
Yeah, but that was
okay. We could do it. I mean, I remember reading the book and thinking it sounded like a cool project, and also one that sounded like there were many points at which it could go wrong.
Daunting. It was going to be daunting. Oh, well, there's many things I would probably do different as a dad.
Is that one of them?
Teach you
I hope
dad
not.
This.
I hope not.
Yeah.
Really?
I would have made you do that. That would have been a really good thing.
Make
for you.
Me. We were going to do it together.
Well, I would have made you do it together with me. I said, get in here. But it didn't
happen. I think it would have been cool. I think I'd be really good, actually, at being a car mechanic.
Really?
Yeah. I'm good at putting things together.
Didn't get that from me.
I'm actually very mechanically minded when I try. It's one of my skills.
Totally did not get that from me.
I'm also really good at maps and directions.
Now that you got from me. Let's talk about Shake Shack and stuff like that.
That thing instead of like random
kind of
memories.
Like what we're into.
I was wondering about, before we could like talk about numbers and whatevers, this is something, what it brings to mind for me is this big question that I've been basically pondering since we started this whole investing education thing. When you have somebody like Shake Shack, so for anybody who didn't listen to the last one, Shake Shack is a burger restaurant chain that got started in New York City and has a famous restaurateur named Danny Myers, who's the CEO, the business guy, and the ideas guy behind it. And he's very well known. And so when you have a company that has a leader like that, a founder, who then maybe, I can't remember when he stepped away, but I'm pretty sure he's pretty much stepped away from the company. How do you sort of factor in the potential risk of them leaving the company? Like, I love companies that have founders running them. But if the founder leaves, that suddenly becomes a very different company. So for something, and Shake Shack's a great example, for something like that, how do you as an investor personally handicap, maybe would be a way to ask that question.
Well, I handicap it big time. If the founder leaves, that's a huge red flag to me.
Not leaves, but just let's say like you're investing. I really like this founder. They're involved. But like, who knows, you know, maybe they leave the year after you invest or something. I know that changes the story dramatically, but like when you're making the initial investment, how much do you think about that potential happening?
Like the potential of the founder leaving?
Yeah.
Put it like this. If like the management team is one of the really critical things you want to have for a company. Mm-hmm. And especially if there's founders involved, you want to know that they're really good at what they do, because often they own enough control of the company that there wouldn't be a time when they could be forced out probably.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're going to run things, there actually is one of my favorite things to invest with people who have founded their companies, particularly if they're down, you know, a couple of generations down into it. We did Sanderson Farms for a long time because we got a tip from a friend of ours that we ride horses with, that she was friends with Sanderson. Joe Sanderson runs it. And he's like second or third generation running this chicken poultry place.
Hmm.
And it's just, and so you know that there's a, first off, that there's a deep connection between investors and the founders, because they all got a lot of stock.
Yeah.
And if that stock has problems, number one, they got a lot of stock. Second, they're going to look for the long run. They are not going to be forced to be quarter to quarter like a lot of companies are.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The companies that are quarter to quarter are often run by mercenaries. And it sounds a little harsh, but that's what they are, right? They're fast gun for hire. You get them out of Harvard Business School by the gross, and they go run companies. That's what they're trained to do. They're mercenaries, just, you know, samurai warrior Ronin who are going to go
by the way,
run some
can
company.
Be freaking amazing at running companies. And
yeah, go watch The Seven Samurai.
You're using a negative word, but village. I don't consider it to be negative.
Well, hey, have you seen The Seven Samurai? Have you ever seen that Kurosawa movie?
No.
You've got to see it. It is so classic. And I think it's been remade in Western movies with gunfighters and, you know, Westerns. And there's no way they can even get close to the impact of what Kurosawa did. So it doesn't negate their skill set to say that they're mercenaries. These seven samurai were no longer had a master, and they were Ronin, and they couldn't eat. So they sign on to help, you know, guard people or do whatever. And a village that had no money, that was being robbed by bandits every time they had a harvest, and the girls were being raped, and it was terrible. They couldn't do anything about it because they didn't know how to fight. And so they sent somebody to go get some samurai, and all the samurai like, piss off, right? I'm not going to come and die for a bunch of farmers, right? And they don't have any money.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I mean, isn't the whole idea is that they do it in exchange for money? Okay.
Right.
So
if they had no money, you could get some rice. Come on. First thing, yeah. And so any case, there's these samurai who are really, you know, that's a real moral guy who sees the problem. Anyway, he rounds up a bunch of guys, seven of them, and they go into this village.
So they do it not for money.
They do it not for money. They do it because they're warriors.
And one could say at that point, perhaps no longer under the mercenary label.
That's probably right. Probably right. Yeah. If you take the $20 million a year away from these guys, I don't think they're there running your company anymore. But these guys want to fight for these villages.
They're doing it for another reason, like long-term stock gains.
That would be okay. I'd be good with that.
I'd be happy with that. Absolutely.
The problem I've got is they don't have downside. When
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You got to have skin in the game. That's what I'm looking for CEOs that have skin in the game. They've got, and that's why I like the founders so much. They got a lot of skin in the game. It's family money, right? So when you look at Sanderson Farms, that was Sanderson's family. You look at Tyson Farm, that's the Tyson family. You know, I mean, you can find them out there. The guys that run the biggest egg producer in the country, I always forget the name of it. They're a family run business that goes all the way back. You know, you look at what Ray Kroc did with McDonald's. He basically turned it into his own business and ran it like a founder. Same thing with Starbucks with Schultz. I really like that. Same thing with Apple with Jobs. And, you know,
I mean, not really a family business, right?
No, I mean, it's founder run, you know.
Yeah, founder
run. It wasn't founder run. It really ran off the rails.
Yeah.
And so I love a founder-run business.
By the way, can we just give Tim Cook his due here? Because I was not confident.
Oh, no.
What?
I'm not a Tim Cook fan right now.
Okay. But I was not confident after Steve Jobs passed away. I was like way down on Apple thinking the same thing would happen again. And he has kept that company going really well.
Okay. I'll give him 10 out of 10 for that.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I give him 0 out of 10.
Okay.
As I understand it, I don't know if this was from Isaacson's book on Jobs or where I heard this, so it's not gospel, that Steve Jobs did not want to put manufacturing in China, and Cook, who was the head of his operations, really pushed it and got manufacturing in China. And now Apple is in a really bad position.
I agree.
And I don't know if
and that wouldn't surprise me that Jobs didn't want that.
Yep. And the problem is what makes it really, really bad is you've got a guy running the company who is not about to say, I really made a terrible mistake. He's going to try to defend that China connection. And he is.
Oh, is he?
You know, actively staying active with China. And, you know, it's going to, I mean, Tim Cook could take that thing down because of his decision to put the manufacturing there.
At the same time, it is pretty impressive that they've managed to divorce themselves from Intel to some extent by creating their own chips. That is a huge, huge move that Apple has made. So I see them trying to regain control. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I agree. In my opinion, that company has moved into the realm of like run by a paid person, not somebody who really is identified with Apple, although his name is Tim Apple, as we all know. Oh, obligatory joke. I'm sorry. Okay. So
it's not even funny.
It's like a little bit funny. It's just enough.
You're a little bit funny.
But so like, yes, founders are important massively.
Yeah, so, but here, look at, let's go back to Shake Shack for a second, because here's this guy who founds it, but his heart isn't in running a burger business, right? He's not a Ray Kroc, let's figure out how to franchise. He's a guy that loves to build restaurants.
Yeah, and he's amazing at it.
Right? So if you look at the founder of Shake Shack and you go, is this the right guy to put all of my retirement money with and all of my future if you're going to buy just one company? Would I want it to be this guy's company? Because, hey, he's the founder. I would say, boom, red flag. This guy is unlikely to be running this franchise company well.
It's okay, not well, what that's, he does. That's an opinion, but it's one that a lot of investors disagreed with because a lot of people bought that company when it went public because of Danny Meyer.
And who was right?
Well, to be fair, Dad, you're looking with a lot of hindsight, and they were not.
But I didn't buy it when he came roaring
you,
out.
You hadn't even heard of it until last week.
I heard of it. But no, I mean, it's just like the writing was on. To me, the writing's on the wall. When you go with somebody, you got to go with a management team that's talented. And what do they have to be talented in? They have to be talented in franchising and building out, you know, thousands of Shake Shack locations.
I hear you. Yeah.
You're not looking for a brilliant cook.
Fair. Well, he's not a cook. He's a restaurant manager.
He's a restaurateur.
He's a restaurateur.
Okay. Then I would say,
by the way, the restaurant I couldn't remember last time was 11 Madison Park. That's his flagship restaurant. And it is
the new flagship restaurant. Because the old flagship restaurant was the Union Square Cafe.
No, that was never the flagship. That's just been there a long time and is very successful, but it's not ultra fine dining. 11 Madison Park is ultra fine dining and is fab, and I highly recommend people go. And then you can go to Shake Shack afterwards, which is across the street in the park.
Oh, great. Have a burger.
So my point is
better than the meal you got there at the other
what
place.
Kind of handicap do I put on a company that has a founder who, let's say, I actually do think would be amazing at running a franchise or running whatever business this company does, a Martha Stewart, let's say.
A Martha Stewart, maybe.
And yet, like, how do I know that she's not going to drop dead? Please, God, don't let that happen to Martha. But just this is only an example. It's hypothetical. How do I know, like, what happens to that company without her? And how do I handicap for that in my like investing process?
Okay, tough question. I mean, here, and that, the answer is don't buy this new stuff.
Don't buy this new stuff.
Wait, don't buy new companies. Wait until they've really gone through 10 years of data and the management team has been through a big recession. And then you'll get a good sense of whether they've come out of that recession, if that was an anti-fragile company or whether that was a fragile company. If, you know, as Buffett says, you get to see when the tide goes out, who's been swimming naked. When the tide's coming in, everything's great. But when the tide goes out, real problems start to show up and cracks happen in the management team. So you want to really see the data, and that eliminates an awful lot of sort of startup kinds of questions, like will Martha Stewart be a successful CEO or will Danny Meyer be a successful CEO? Here we are down the road, you know, 10 years later, and Danny Meyer's not a successful CEO, and is the people who invested in his startup at the IPO have made no money for a decade.
Okay.
Right?
Let me rephrase.
So that's how I would look at it.
Person X is a very successful CEO and has 30 years of data. Person X in the company. The company has 30 years of data. Person X is the founder, is like the world's greatest manager of companies the world has known. Incredible. Couldn't be better.
Right.
I guess what I'm asking is like, what kind of key man insurance, key man is what we call it in venture capital. Like without this person, this company doesn't really work. But with this person, this company's in, like, amazing and totally worth investing in. And there's actual insurance policies you can buy for if the key man or woman, but it's called key man, like gets hit by a bus. So what kind of key man insurance sort of thought process would I go through?
I actually deal with that quite, I don't deal with it all the time, but I've dealt with it a lot of times. Looking at a company like Taiwan Semiconductor that's got a, you know, the CEO was 90 and the founder and brilliant, you know, and we stayed away from it because of that.
That's a fair point. And somebody who's older and is definitely going to retire soon, let's say. That's a really similar situation. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And it's just because we couldn't evaluate the guys that were underneath him. It's a Chinese company and we didn't really know how to do that. On the other hand, we look at Berkshire and the guy running that's 90 years old. And I feel very confident about it because I understand the value of the business very well. It's not a technology business like Taiwan Semiconductor is. So I don't have to worry about people being brilliant. I just have to worry about the guys who take over from Buffett running it. And they're running it now. They're running all of the subsidiaries now.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I can look and see that the people who are coming up behind the CEO who's old or retiring or whatever are brilliant, then I'm good. At OZK, Bank OZK, we've got the same thing. George Gleason he's like my age. I mean, he basically built that thing from when he was in his 20s and is brilliant, brilliant banker. And banking in particular, a lot like a technology company, you really have a lot of confidence in the management team or you're screwed because they can make a muddle of it, as we've seen lately.
Yeah.
So Gleason is gonna leave. I don't know when he's gonna leave. So we're looking really closely at the guy that's running the major division there, the real estate division. And we really like him and he's really good. And he took over from a guy that Gleason fired who was a superstar. I don't know. To this day, nobody knows why they had parted company. But it was going to be that the real estate group was going to fail. I mean, that's what was going to happen. And OZK was going to have big trouble and their stock went down like 60% when this guy left. And Gleason picked this other guy and he's great. And he's built, that's clear back in 2017 or something. He's had a lot of years under his thumb now and done very, very well with it. Very well. So all good.
I really appreciate that answer because you're right. I think of it as this very like rare situation of a special person who's identified with the company very directly, but you're exactly right. It's not just that. It's actually quite a probably somewhat common situation of retirement, of somebody wanting to move on after 10 years, try something new. Like how, it's really actually not such an isolated question. It's much more like, what does happen to this company when this person who's identified with it, who's been running it very successfully, does leave? Because that is going to happen to every single company that we invest in. Maybe it doesn't happen while we own it, but it's going to happen 100% of the time.
100%
so,
right.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting reframing I hadn't quite
done. Look at Ulta, right? I mean, Mary Dillon decided that, you know, she built the company she wanted to build at Ulta, and the challenges were now how do we really make this continue to grow and have, you know, have fun growing it? And she loves to build stuff. And it's kind of like, okay, well, the next step for Alta is going to be a big next step. In order to grow, they're going to have to go overseas. And she picked a guy who's an accountant to take over the company. Mm. And the stock was doing real well, and I sold it.
Mm.
I just didn't have a confidence that this guy would do well. Stock continued to go up, riding her coattails on all the work she had done, but now it's back down again because nobody knows how this guy's going to build this thing. And you take the growth rate out of this thing, and all of a sudden the multiple goes down, and he's got a lot cheaper stock.
Yeah, so, super interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
It really is super interesting.
Let's chew on that, and then we'll maybe talk a little bit more about Shake Shack details next time.
All right, that sounds good. Love you, honey. Good talking.
Time to go Love play. You too. Thanks for listening, everybody, to our reminiscences bye-bye. About VW bugs.
Yeah, man. I'd do that again.
I just remember enjoying reading that book. I read that book like cover to cover. It was very.
Honey, it's not too late. If you want to come and hang out and rebuild a Volkswagen engine, I could get behind that.
Let's do it. Yeah, why not? Spend 3 months.
We'll keep you all posted on that.
Yeah. What else have we got to do?
The pot-bellied stove keeping us warm.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor. Nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.